Welcome to the Surviving Grief Podcast, hosted by our grief ministry leaders at Crossroads Church. We'll be sitting down with friends as they share their powerful stories of loss and healing, and we'll hear from grief professionals and other wise people with useful tools for our own time of grief. If you're supporting someone who's grieving, you'll learn how to comfort them and walk with them on their own path to healing. Let's join the conversation.
So, Peter,
tell
me your story.
My story is crossroad attendee for many years, family of four, Heidi and myself, two kids, moved to Cincinnati from Connecticut and Rhode Island through work-related things, and just living a normal life, you know, average, typical life in Cincinnati.
So tell me about that day.
So I was at work. It was Christmas break, corporate break. You know, everybody takes a little time between kind of Christmas Eve and New Year's. And I went to work. I do residential construction. And while I was at work, I was gone for the day. Heidi was having breakfast with her boss. She was going to the gym. She was, you know, I think she had an eye doctor appointment, standard stuff, right? Nails, etc. And then the kids called me at 5:30 and said, "Mom fainted." I said, "Okay, well, she's a corporate lady, probably dehydrated," something to that effect. That was at 5:30. I said, "What happened?" And they said, "We went upstairs and we found her and she had fainted in the bedroom." They called 911. The kids went to the car and let everybody get Heidi. They took her to the hospital. And at 7:30, we were talking organ donation. It was over. So I thought we were having breakfast that day. We weren't, because she had scheduled breakfast with her boss and best friend at P&G. And 2 hours, well, at the end of that day, 2 hours after the kids had told me that she had fainted, we decided whether we wanted to do palliative care or terminate care, and Heidi could go to heaven. So the hospital waiting room is always a sad place to sit and wait for those kinds of things. And so what we did is we went home. Our house is just a mile from Mercy Hospital in Anderson. And we sat around the Christmas tree. So it was me and the two kids. We have a son, Spencer, and Claire, who's his older sister. And the nurse called us and she said, I have the doctor for you and we're ready to, we need to talk to you. And I said, put her on the phone. So the doctor got on the phone and she said she's had a major brain aneurysm and we need to decide what to do. Do you want to do palliative care or do you want to terminate care? And so the first place I saw God show up in this room with me, the very dim light, the Christmas tree lit, the kids sitting there, everybody sort of in shock. I looked at the kids and I said, "What do you guys think?" And Claire said, "Let's pray," with the doctor on the phone. And so she did. And she said this prayer: "God, if you can't bring Mom back to fully herself, drop the hammer. Amen." And I said, "What do you think?" And Spencer nodded, and I nodded, and I said, "We're going to terminate care." And so they said, "Would you like to be an organ donator? You know, would you like her to be an organ donor?" And I said, "Yes." And so she went to heaven, I think, at that point. That was it. They, but when you donate your organs, there's a procedure that you go through, which is about gathering a team of people together, because they can't just do it that second, right? There's a group of people that have to be gathered to gather cornea, kidneys, liver, heart, lungs, skin grafts, etc. And that team takes a minute to gather. So a group of people come in, they put you into a temporary state, I'll call it, while they gather that team to begin the organ donation, which happened on New Year's Day 2022.
So were you able to be, you mentioned that you were at home. Were you able to see her at the hospital?
No, I never saw her again. I never saw her again. I kissed her. I kissed her that morning. I said, I thought we were having breakfast. She said, no, I'm busy today. I've got errands and I'm having breakfast with my boss and my friend. And I said, okay, well, then I'll see you tonight and we'll watch Yellowstone when I get home. And so that was it. I never saw her again because just under the weird thing that happens, the hospital only lets you have two visitors per day. So I called my dudes and I told them what had happened. And they said, let your kids go say goodbye to their mother. And so that day, two people went, my two kids, our two kids. And then I went the next day and they said, oh, we thought that you were done. So that all went away. I never saw her again. And the truth of the matter is I wasn't prepared to see her. I mean, I couldn't handle it. Later, they transported her to the funeral home when I could have gone and seen her in the back room, if you will. I couldn't handle it. I mean, we haven't talked about it, but I just can't tell you how shocking it all was to go from what you consider a normal day to a loss like that. Falling off a cliff would have been much easier. I mean, it's just a sudden drop. And so one of the things that people talk about and you hear people say is like, is it more difficult to have a long, slow goodbye, like your partner has breast cancer or some long, slow 5-10 year thing, or sudden? And the answer is, it's all terrible. There's no easy way, right? So it's been very tough. It's a tough set of cards. It's a really tough set of cards. But I'm a big believer in my faith has been strengthened. We were strong in our faith before this all happened, thankfully. And my faith has strengthened as a result of it. And I'm a big believer in the bottom line up front. And so what I'm going to give you and your listeners, the bottom line up front is you will make it. You will be okay. It is a incredibly difficult set of cards. It's not a set of cards that you want. It's not a set of cards that you want to play. But you will make it, and I will make it. On that day, I did not think I was going to make it. But about 2 weeks ago, on October 10th of 2023, so a year and 10 months later-ish, I woke up in the morning and I said, how lucky am I? How lucky am I? I mean, I am so fortunate. And we can talk about why I think that, but the journey that I've been through, though incredibly difficult, has been an eye-opening and life-giving journey. And the reason I'm sitting in this chair today is because I would like to lend my quiet and steadfast support to one person somewhere that says, I don't think I can make it. And I want to tell you, you can make it. You can make it.
Peter, so, you know, you go from not being able to have breakfast and it's just a normal day and we have Yellowstone and then you're making unbelievably difficult decisions. Mm-hmm. And you're not only grieving as a husband, mm-hmm. but you're supporting your two children who are in shock and are grieving themselves. Mm-hmm. What does that next week look like? Because this was so sudden. There's whiplash, right? Did you have moments where you like woke up in the morning and it hadn't hit you yet that she was gone?
Yeah, I had that this morning. I mean, I'm still having that. I still can't believe it. So the thing about grief is it's very simple, right? You just have to acknowledge what happened and accept it. It's two little things. So I'm just a little bit less than 2 years into my journey. I'm still working on accepting it. You know, you said to me in our group, Heidi has gone to heaven and will not be coming home. That took me a year to say that. That's very difficult for me to say today. I'm still working on accepting that. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And I just wish that you had had the chance to know Heidi. I mean, she was an amazing woman. That was an amazing woman. She was the better half of our family, the quartz of a family, the mother, the wife, the corporate success. She was a great lady, and I wouldn't trade places with anybody. I wouldn't trade places with anybody. But I will tell you, it has been a very tough 2 years, just a little under 2 years. Been tough. But you're going to make it. Now, your listeners, you out there that are crying in the car, you're crying in bed, you're crying in the shower, you're going to make it. I made it. I did not think I was going to make it. I mean, I just stood there. I could not believe it. And it was just a, you know, it was just a shattering blow. What I've learned from that, you can't hurt me. I've been hurt, right? Now the Lord has picked me up, turned me around, and planted my feet on solid ground. You know, I am strong. I am going to be okay. I can stand on my own 2 feet, and so can you.
That's powerful.
You can do it.
So those first, let's say, the first month, you have the funeral.
Mm-hmm. The funeral. Cremation. Done.
Cremation.
Couldn't handle a funeral.
So what is that transition like now to, you had these routines. How long were you married?
28 years.
28 years. Mm-hmm. So you have 28 years of routines, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm, plans, mm-hmm, and now the family has changed. Your routines have changed. Walk me through what that first month is like, just adjusting to life.
So the first thing that you, the first question my kids asked me when we decided we were going to terminate care is, what about us? And I said, we continue the mission. You know, nothing changes. So I'm a former Army officer. And I was like, the mission goes on. We continue to roll. You're going back to school. You're going back to school. I'm going back to work. So it was curious to me that very quickly, you know, all we like to really mostly think about is ourselves, right? And even in this case, you think about yourself. And I said, we're going to continue the mission. But for me personally, so Claire went back to school. My son Spencer went back to school. And I think that you have the opportunity when you are in this type of a situation, you have the opportunity to make good or bad choices. You are in trauma and you have to make good choices. There are bad choices, liquor, gambling, drugging. I don't know. You can think of all the other bad choices that you can make. My choice was sleep. And so I was sleeping 15 to 20 hours a day. I just could not believe it. So I would get up at 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, start a fire in the fireplace at our house, and then I would try to do one administrative task, you know, because nothing stops. Even though you've gone through all of this trauma, you know, the payments need to be made. People want to know if you want to get your insurance payout, you have to set up an estate. You know, there's still administrative that continues on. And so I would try to do one administrative task a day. We're business people, so I'm all about getting things done. And I would get up at 1, get a fire going, do one task, and I would go to bed, you know, 5, 6, 7 o'clock at night and get up the next morning. But I'm embarrassed to tell you that when I went to bed, my prayer was, you know, please don't wake me up in the morning. I do not want to be here. I want to be done with this. And that was probably 90 days. I was sleeping 15 to 18 hours a day, just in total trauma. So the thing is when you hurt yourself or when you get hurt, what do? You need care, right? So where does your care come from? This is another important decision. You have to know where you are and you have to know who's going to care for you. So when you're in that situation, you have to decide, are these people going to care for me well? Am I going to care for myself well? And you have to decide how you're going to proceed. I'm fortunate because I was able to find the Crossroads Grief Group. I have a group of 5 guys that I've been in community with for a long time. And And I have some kids who were very close. So I had good people around me. But I'm going to tell you something. There are people that showed up out of the blue that are amazing. And there are people that you thought would show up out of the blue who completely, there are people that dipped on you. Did I say that right? Did that make sense? So some people you're like, oh, this person will definitely be there for me when this bad thing happens. They completely dip. There are people who you think like don't even know you, who show up with flowers, bags, cards. They just want to hug you. And you're like, I can't believe this person is even coming here. So that's eye-opening. And so what I say to that is, you're the bus driver. You're the bus driver of your own trauma. And as a bus driver, you've got people on your bus. You've got your sister-in-law who knows everything. Your alcoholic father-in-law, you know, you've got people who are the salt of the earth, kind and gentle. The people that you need off your bus, you got to stop at the next stop and let them off. It's a little bit harsh, right? And there are people standing on the curb who want to get on your bus that love you and want to come on and hug you and care for you and encourage you. You got to let them on. It's a tricky situation, but it's an important situation. And the thing is you can have people around you that that don't need to be on your bus. People are not trained in saying things for someone who's grieving and in trauma, and they say terrible things to you. Some of it's malicious. A lot of it's not malicious. They just say it. You know what I mean? And I had somebody say to me, oh, man, that must be really tough. My dog died, too, and I was really upset. I let them off at the next stop. You know, I was like, if that's how you're going to relate to me on this with your dog, we just aren't going to be together for now.
In those first 90 days, what were things that brought you care and comfort that other people were doing? How were they meeting you in that hard place?
It's community. You know, I'm a social cat. I need people around me. I just felt like no one could relate to me. No one understands the pain that I'm going through. What about me? What about now? What about this? What about that? And one day I woke up and I realized, like, I'm not crying for Heidi. I'm crying for myself. I'm crying for broken dreams, broken plans. She had a thing on her computer, which there's always an app, right? And you could count down the number of days until you retire. So she had that on her phone. And what she didn't know is she was counting down the days of her life. And so when it got to, you know, like 39, the clock stopped, you know, and she had a major brain aneurysm. So the thing is, you're just like, to work for 30 years and save and be diligent and set your kids up to go to school and love each other and go through the young kids, middle kids, high school kids, sending them to college, and then like that. I mean, it's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable. But I know that the tragedies that you've experienced, I know that they're heart-wrenching and I know they're heartbreaking, but you can make it. You will make it. You are talking to someone that did not think I was going to make it. I was convinced that I would not make it.
I know those days where you just don't know how you're going to get to the next minute or
That's
the
right.
next hour. We have the 90 days of really just you healing and the sleep. And, you know, we so often talk about the physical symptoms of grief mm-hmm. that so many people overlook mm-hmm. and the fatigue like you cannot imagine. And
right.
the sleep is just, it's not only healing from a physical standpoint, right? But there's just a weariness to us, even when you wake up after
right.
18 hours of sleep, and there's still just that weightedness
yes.
To life. So after that 90 days, mm-hmm. as you mentioned, time is marching on.
Time
so
is,
there, you know,
nothing stops.
A business owner yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You still have kids that you're checking in with. You have things that need your attention that you can't fully check out on.
Correct.
So what is that transition like for you?
So for me, that's the people that you don't expect. You know, a friend of mine called me and he's like, what are you doing? I said, you know, I'm in bed. You know, and he's like, well, it's 2:00. And I said, so? I'm only going to sleep for another hour or two and then I'm going to get up, you know? And he said, come with me and let me buy you lunch. And I was like, okay. You know, it's like that. So you have a few special people that reach out to you and you accept. You know, my circle got small quickly and I didn't want to see a lot of people. I didn't want any cards or visitors. Of course, you still get hundreds, right? And all of that. But slowly you accept invitations from the people that know. You know, if you know, you know. And there are some people that know and they're like, we can't let him just lay there and sleep, you know, endlessly, days after days after days, months on end, you know. And you slowly, and then it also happened to be spring, you know, 90 days would have been March-ish, April, you know, and you're like, maybe it'll be okay. You know, the sun comes out, the birds come out, the leaves pop, and you're like, I just can't lay here in bed forever, right? So slowly you regain your footing and you realize like I'm going to stand up again and keep going. But what I want to tell you was transitional for me is I was sitting in my group and now I'm 90, 120 days into it. And these guys were great to me and we spent a lot of time talking mostly about me. I was the needy group member in that time. And I told them, I said, you know, my prayer is I want to be done. And one of the guys just glibly said to me, what would Heidi say if she saw you walking down the hall toward her in heaven? And I was like, the question just rocked me. And I said, you know what? She'd be, why are you here? You know? I said, well, you know, I missed you and I just wanted to be with you. And she's like, well, what did you do with the kids? Oh, I left them. She's like, you left the kids and you came. And I said, it would be ugly in the hall in heaven, right? And she'd be up in my grill. And I was like, you know what? That was the transitional point for me where I was like, you got to keep going. So one of the things that we say in the Army, continue the mission. You got to continue the mission, man. Let's go. It's time to go. My new license plate is LFG, which just means let's go.
It's amazing how just some of those little phrases that someone shares with us, you know, sometimes I think it's the Holy Spirit who's just showing up through community and that light bulb goes off.
Yep.
And it's such a perspective shift.
Yeah. I mean, that just changed everything for me from that point forward. I was like, you got to fight. And it's time to get up. It's time to get back to work. So I took some jobs and I just got some smaller and then bigger, progressively bigger and sort of got into it. So I would say my grief journey was sleepy, busy, thankful.
You know, there's an element of your story that I think so many people can relate to, especially in spouse loss. Hmm. You had plans. Mm-hmm. There's this light, right, that we're progressing towards. She had the countdown on her phone.
Yeah.
You had dreams. You had plans. You had, you made it through each kid stage, right? You did the work. You did the things. And so this was supposed to be your season together.
That's right.
How did you process some of that loss? Because that's almost like a secondary loss, right? The death of a dream a little bit.
No, it's 100% correct. I'm still processing that. It's unbelievable because I give the analogy of like a dinner party, like the roast was just ready to come out of the oven. Everybody was at the table, everything was set and like that, gone, Heidi. And so I'm looking now for my new life. You know, I feel like I got married when I was 30. So I feel like I had 30 years of being single and then I was married for 28 years. And now I'm looking for my new life. You know, I call it my third life. What am I going to do? I don't know. I'm optimistic about it. I'm hopeful about it. You know, we planned well, so I'm okay. And business is good and the kids are good. I mean, we're thriving. I hope that in some small way that, you know, Heidi can see how we are standing on the shoulders of her and the things that we planned for have all come to play. And it's going to be good, man, but it's just going to be without Heidi. And so I'm still working through that. What my next life is going to be, I don't know. I don't know.
Peter, you and I have had the opportunity to connect with other people who are grieving here at the Crossroads Grief Group. Mm-hmm. And one thing that tends to be really consistent when we have men walk through the door is that they have a hard time sharing. Yeah. They have a hard time sharing about their journey. Mm-hmm. And so how would you encourage that person who has lost a spouse? And, you know, you had five guys around you that you could really be transparent with. And like you said, you could be the needy guy in the group.
Yeah.
And not everybody has that community.
Yeah.
So for men specifically, how would you encourage them to process? Because that processing needs to happen one way or another. Because what we know about grief is that it's going to bubble up, whether it's physically, emotionally, even spiritually, it is going to come out. And so it's a matter of, are you going to face it head on, or is it going to fester? And then that's where that bitterness and just so much can kind of spiral quickly for us. So kind of give me your thoughts on that.
100% true. You know, like I said, you make choices, and we all, you know, we all have an Amazon account, and we all have Netflix, and we all have the ability to stream and look at the computer. There's a lot of bad advice out there. And for men, you have a lot of opportunity to make some very bad choices, right? And I think I would say, number one, be diligent in what you're choosing. Number two, there is no nobility in drowning silently. That is not going to help you. That is not going to help your kids. It's not going to help your family. Here's the thing. What I look at this grief now, as I look back at it through an almost 2-year lens, I think to myself, I want to grieve well. And I want to look back at this time in my life, and I want people to say, he grieved well, he did that with grace and dignity, a very difficult set of cards, and he handled it well. As a man, you are the leader of your kids, and they're looking at you, right? I want my kids to be like, you know, after dad lost mom, the clock stopped. That's what I don't want. What I want them to do is I want them to look at me and say, dad handled that with grace, and he managed it well. I mean, they're still processing it, and it'll take them 10, 20 years from now, and they'll say, how did dad handle his grief, right? People are looking at you. No one would blame you for slipping and falling. I've done some irresponsible things in grief, and I've made some bad choices, but largely I've made good choices. And I would say to men, make good choices, grieve well. Your kids and your people around you are looking at you to carry the mantle of your family. Nobly drowning quietly while you drink yourself or porn yourself or whatever to satisfy your own aching heart is not going to serve you. Really, we know the answer, right? It's Jesus, right? He's the one. My favorite verse is 1 Peter 5:8. After you've suffered a little while, the Lord himself will rebuild you. I love that, right? So I own a construction company. I mean, this is the creator of the universe who said, you suffer for a little while, I myself will rebuild you. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted. I need that, right? That's what I lean on. Those are the verses. And that's what I would say to the men in your group. The Lord will rebuild you. You're going to suffer. It's okay. The other thing I would say is, in society, we say, you got to move on. I think that's wrong. I think you move forward. I'm not moving on. I will love Heidi all my days, and I can't wait to see her again when I go to heaven. But I'm not moving on. So my language is, you move forward, right? I'm not moving on. This is something I'll never forget. It was the worst day of my life. It's been an incredibly challenging season. But I want to look back on it, and I want people to say, you know, for what he went through, that would have crushed a lot of people. He handled it well.
You know, you talked about God being close to the brokenhearted.
Mm-hmm.
How have you seen God meet you just from a personal faith standpoint? You know, mm-hmm. when I think about God being close to the brokenhearted, mm-hmm. there are times that I felt maturing and growth in my personal relationship that I don't think would have been possible when things are going well, right? There's a certain clinging and a certain desperation to God and just needing him to show up when we are in that valley of mourning. Mm-hmm. What did that look like for you?
So, you know, for me, it was a combination of Crossroads. I go to Crossroads Oakley. You know, we sat second floor right, and I mean, I just sat there and I cried like a baby. I mean, just racked with tears, and I just could not believe. Sunday was the day that I had Heidi's undivided attention. We would go to church, we would go to brunch, and then we would watch football, make some food. It was the day that I got her undivided attention for the entire day. And to be there alone without her, I mean, I just cried like a baby. But here's the thing. I was consuming healthy information. I was consuming. And like my buddy Drew said to me, he's like, what would Heidi say if she saw you in heaven? She'd be bummed. You know, and I was like, you got to continue the mission, man. It's time to fight. And the thing is, grief takes courage, right? You want to grieve, it takes courage. And if you think you're a man and you want to grieve, it takes some courage and face some ugly truths. You got to face the dragon, right? It is way easier to make bad choices and try to numb with whatever you use to numb. It's not easy to grieve. It's messy. Like I said, you got to bus. You got to let some people off who, it can be painful. I mean, I felt like some people very close to me did not show up. And I felt like some people who are distantly remote on LinkedIn calling me, and you're like, it's unbelievable. You know what? You just got to go with that.
Now, Peter, some time removed, do you look back at some of those interactions and have more grace for how people did or did not show up? Now knowing how grief, even secondhand, interacts with people, whether they have their own losses, it's so many times that's, do I say something? Do I not say something? Is this going to make him sad? So looking back now, some of these people that you really felt hurt by because they didn't show up in a way that you wanted them to.
That's right.
What is that like? Now looking back,
I forgive them all. I am not the judge. I am not the jury. This is above my pay grade. I am one man with two kids. I am fighting the fight. It is not my place to judge them. They are grieving too on, you know, second, third tier out on the loss, the same loss that I'm grieving. And so it's just not my place to, it's not my place to judge them. I forgive them. I understand why they didn't show up. I cry in the car alone. It's okay.
What did that first year of holidays or birthdays, what did that look like enduring and to really endure well and continue the mission, as you said?
Yeah. So I just took it very slowly and very realistically. You know, you have roles as a father of, you know, caretaker, coach, counselor, and historian, you know, and I took on the historian role. I was always the counselor with Heidi, and we counseled our kids on this yes and this no. And I just transitioned. I put a new hat on. I'm the historian. We talked about your mother loved Christmas. You know, and I took that role on, and I'm comfortable speaking about her now, and I'm comfortable speaking about what she would think of what these kids are doing and what I'm doing. And we just took it a day at a time. You know, one of the things I would say about grief is that it narrows my focus. When we were counting down to Heidi's retirement, we're like, we'll do this and we'll go here. And in 2 years, we'll drive across the country and then we'll do that. You know, now I think like, what's today? Wednesday? I'm like, tomorrow I have my dude group. And Friday I have someone coming to my shop to meet me. That's it. You know, so it has narrowed my focus from 2 years ago and 2 years out to what am I doing this week? And I live in the present, and I am trying to honor my family. I'm trying to honor my kids, honor my friends and the people around me. And grieve well. Like I said, I wouldn't trade with anybody. And like I said, I mean, I woke up and I was like, how lucky am I? How different of a prayer is that from, Lord, please don't wake me up. I want to be gone. It took me 1 year, 10 months, and 11 days.
God is good.
God is good. And God is there, and you can do it. You'll make it.
How has this changed how you show up for other people now? Because something happens when we experience deep loss. We mm-hmm. suddenly become a magnet, and we're either just more attuned to other people's loss, or people know that you've experienced loss and you just hear more about it.
Yeah.
So how has this changed how you show up?
So my goal now is I have committed my life to the Lord, right? And I say, hey, whatever you need me to do, I'm here. I am a captain in God's army. I do what you want me to do. A lot of people are hurting. There are people that are hurting for all kinds of reasons, not just loss, but divorce and addiction. And I mean, people are hurting everywhere. My goal, and the reason I'm sitting here talking with you today, is because I want to be the light for one or two people. I just want to try to help somebody and say, you're going to make it. You're going to be okay. I know it hurts, man. Trust me. When I tell you, I know it hurts. But you're gonna make it. And so when I see people that are hurting, I met somebody yesterday who had lost a son, and I said, you know, what was his name? You know, just tell me about him. He loved it. You know, just a few moments of just connection, and another person gets you. You know, so I just want to be that for whoever I can be that for. That's my new mission.
You know, one thing I love about your story is that you're so willing to feel the feels, to ride the roller coaster.
Yeah.
And we've worked in enough large grief groups that can be a challenge for men. That can be a challenge, especially, as you said, they're kind of standing guard, leading their family. And so it can be really challenging to show some of those emotions. Mm-hmm. Did you have periods where you felt like you really had to be strong for your kids and you did not show some of those feelings?
Yeah, 100%. You know, my daughter's 23 and son 20. You know, he doesn't want to talk about it. She will talk about it in incredible detail. So, you know, it's as a man, right, you read your kids and you have to read the room, right? And you have to understand, like, some people are ready to talk about it now. Some people don't want to talk about it yet. Some people are still processing. So read the room and decide, you know, and I engage them where they are. One of the things I love about our faith is that God meets you where you are, right? And so you don't have to be done grieving. And then God will show up once you get yourself together. Dude, meet him messy. You know, I love that. You know, I am a mess. I am holding on by a very thin thread. So I try to read the room and tell the kids what I think I don't tell them what they're looking to hear, but I try to talk to them where they are, right? So grieving begins when you realize you're not going back. Like I would say to you, you can have anything you want, but it's not going back. You're not going back to the way it was. That chapter is over. And so it's like a book. You've turned the page. There is no going back. That Heidi is not coming back. I mean, you know, I kept her car for a year in case she came back. She could get her old job back. She could have her car back. She could have her side of the bed back, which is where I'm now sleeping. You know, it's like, it'll all be okay and you can go back. You're not going back. You're never going back. You move forward, right? And so when you can internalize that, then healing begins. If you think you're going back, you ain't going back, brother. So that was a big step for me. That was sort of what I would call the pivotal moment. You're not going back. And the last thing I would say to you is, you know, with grief comes accusations. And you can say, like, they did this and the hospital did that and my mother-in-law. And you can make all kinds of accusations. We've all thought about that. Here's something you might not have thought about. You can make some accusations against yourself, too. You can be like, I was never any good. I've been terrible. I let him down. I'll never make it now as a single father or mother or sister or brother. You know, Stop with that. Grief does not require accusations. That is above your pay grade. You just deal with your family and you deal with the people around you. Stop laying negative accusations and terrible titles on yourself and those around you. Like I said, through a lot of counseling, right? I forgive everybody. I have no animosity. I have no malice. I forgive everybody. I'm just working through it the best I can. And one of the things that comes with grief is you wrestle with lies and you believe untrue things about yourself, right? And so you just have to lay all of those negative thoughts aside and just deal with the people around you and turn to God. That's my short sermon. What do you think?
That's good. How do you honor her now? Whether it's birthdays, again, holidays, are there things that are rituals that you have?
No rituals. Trying to grieve well is how I'm going to honor her. I want to raise those kids, put them on a path. They're both at Purdue. They're on a good path. One's an engineer and one is studying aviation and they're rolling. So my goal is to honor Heidi through leading our family well.
So this is the question that we ask everybody.
Go.
What does good grief look like? What does it look like to you?
Good grief is it's taking the set of circumstances that you don't have any control over. Nobody asks you what you want in this scenario. Nobody asked me what I wanted. Nobody, it just happened. And good grief means processing and working toward freedom. And working toward freedom means one, figuring out where you are, two, resolving your issues, laying off your accusations, and three, transforming your mind. And that is good grief. If you can do those three things, you will come out of this stronger, wiser, maybe a little more battle weary, but you can be the light for someone else, like I'm trying to do.
Peter, thank you so much for going there, right? For cracking it back open, walking back through.
Yeah.
It was an honor to hear your story.
It's great to talk to you guys.
Surviving Grief is a production of Crossroads Church, Cincinnati, Ohio. If you'd like to connect or share your own story, reach out to us at podcasts@crossroads.net. We'll see you next time.